Chapter 3. October 14th, Part 2. Thought I better update the journal while I'm back in the Hall of Wonders. Dad and Beauty are locking Grendel up in his old room. It's scary to think the hall used to house hundreds of monsters like him, and that they are all running around town now doing who knows what. Dad tried to put a happy face on it by reminding us that now that we have Grendel, we have one less freak to worry about. I reminded him that now we were sleeping next door to said freak. He told me to zip it. I should be grateful, that's all he said, because he's pretty angry at me and my sister. Note to self, don't get Mom and Dad angry. Ever. I forgot how they are when they are steamed, and I think I'd rather face Grendel again. The last time I saw them this steamed was when Daphne invited a homeless man to come live with us. She hid him in our closet for 6 hours before the house cleaner found him. Both of them say we aren't allowed out of their sight, and they swore if we ever pulled a stunt like that again, well, I probably shouldn't write it down in this journal. I'm so embarrassed. I've read a lot of the family journals, and I haven't found one entry where someone got grounded for trying to rescue a family member. It seems like everyone treats me like a child. Even Daphne does it now. Am I that worthless? Not that we're completely to blame for all the stress around here. Goldie's sudden appearance doesn't help. Anytime Blondie shows up, Dad looks like he wants to crawl under a rock, and Mom looks like she'd like to toss that rock at Goldilocks' head. I can't blame her. Who would want her husband's ex around, mooning over him? Goldie doesn't make it any easier. She's so nervous, the chatter never stops. Daphne thinks she's doing it to fill the awkward moments, of which there are plenty. She also has this annoying habit of adjusting everyone's clothes all the time. I don't feel right shifting our attention from Granny Relda to Uncle Jake, especially now that we have found her. But Uncle Jake needs us too. I pray he isn't as bad as they say he is, but I have to wonder. If someone I loved was killed, wouldn't I want revenge? Especially when it seemed like there would never be any justice? If someone murdered Daphne, wouldn't I want to hunt them down and end them? Well, on that bright and cheery note, I have to go. They're calling for me. I'll write more when I can. I have a feeling that I'm going to be spending a lot of time with this journal now that I'm grounded. With the magic mirror strapped securely onto Papa Bear's back, the rest of the bears, the Grimms, Puck, Canis, and Pinocchio, marched through the forest, led by Goldilocks and Beauty.
"Grendel was as ugly as I remember," Beauty said, as she kicked a clump of leaves off her high-heeled shoe.
Her sweater dress was awfully thin for a chilly hike through the woods, but she never complained.
"You have no idea what it was like coming over here on Wilhelm's boat with him. All that grunting and groaning. I was sure at any moment the chains they used to keep him below deck would snap, and he'd eat us all whole. Plus, with all those monsters and jabberwockies running around, ugh. The only way you'll get me on a ship now is if it's a cruise to the Bahamas."
"Why did Wilhelm bring so many of these creepy weirdos to America?" Sabrina asked.
"Wilhelm believed everybody had some goodness in them, even creepy weirdos," Mr. Canis said, as he struggled along with his cane.
Henry had begged him to stay inside the mirror with Red and Baby Basil, but the old man had flatly refused.
"He took a chance on me, and I will always be grateful. Look at some of the people that we now call friends. Morgan Le Fay, Baba Yaga."
"Baba Yaga is hardly a friend," Sabrina interrupted.
"The fact that she's not trying to eat us makes her as close to a friend as we may ever get," Henry laughed.
Goldie giggled.
"In my book, that's personal growth. Henry, do you remember the time we snuck out in the middle of the night and ran into her? We were up on the cliffs and she came along in that creepy house and we..."
Goldie's voice tapered off when Veronica flashed her an irritated glance. Sabrina's father deftly changed the subject.
"You kids might someday think of Grendel as an ally. You might even decide he's ready to be free from the Hall of Wonders."
Or the barrier?
Daphne said. I mean, if they all have the potential for goodness, why not let them out?
A pause, both big and awkward, fell on the group, stealing the air until Pinocchio spoke.
That's an excellent question. How can you say Wilhelm believed in the goodness of ever-afters when he locked an entire town inside a cage?
He had to do something drastic, Henry said. Ever-afters were threatening to invade the next town, and no one would listen to reason.
So I've heard. Still, with his barrier, he punished everyone for the crimes of a few, and even more have stumbled into this town, not realizing they would be imprisoned here for eternity. Take me, for instance. I wasn't even here when the trouble started for Wilhelm, but like so many others, I'm trapped in this roach motel.
Henry opened his mouth to say something, but Pinocchio cut him off.
Even your friends can't escape the cruelty of this jailhouse you call a town. Look at Canis, who has clearly reformed. The wicked queen has proved herself to be somewhat trustworthy. Why, we're walking with Beauty, who, from what I understand, recently counted herself amongst the Scarlet Hand. The goodness that Wilhelm claimed to believe in is easy to see in their faces, and yet they find no reward. They will never leave this town, or should I say prison. But that's not right either. In prison, the inmates sometimes get time off for good behavior. This place is something far worse.
Sabrina couldn't stand Pinocchio, but she had to admit he had made a powerful argument. There had been many nights since arriving in Ferryport Landing when she had lain awake trying to understand Wilhelm's intentions. On one hand, the barrier kept evil people safely away from an unsuspecting world. On the other, it imprisoned some genuinely wonderful people. Was the barrier fair? Was Wilhelm's magic wall solving problems or causing them in the first place? She looked to her father for an answer and saw he was equally perplexed. She suspected that he, too, had spent his fair share of nights trying to unravel the puzzle that was Ferryport Landing.
"So where are we going, anyway?"
Puck asked as he flew above them.
"I've scattered ahead, and there's no sign of any camp."
"You wouldn't see it," Beauty explained. "The castle is invisible."
"The what is what?"
Sabrina said.
"We've been building a castle near Mount Taurus," Beauty said. "Berman and Swinehart designed it, and the rest of us work night and day getting it ready."
"Ready for what?"
Mr. Canis asked.
"War,"
Beauty said.
"Charming's army is going to confront the Scarlet Hand." "Didn't you already try that?"
Pinocchio chuckled dismissively.
"You built a fort, trained everyone, and the Hand overran the place and burned it to the ground. Do you want to make the same mistake twice?" "This is a little different," Goldie said. "Oh, here we are."
Sabrina saw nothing but forest before her.
"Just a sec."
Beauty reached into her purse and pulled out a vial of what looked like purple glitter. She unscrewed the cap and poured some of the substance into her hand, then blew it into the air. As the powder drifted through the trees, it collided with the rain, and each drop exploded like a tiny firework, illuminating a structure so tall and wide, Sabrina's brain struggled to believe her eyes. Eventually, she realized she was standing in front of a wall dozens of stories tall, higher than some of the skyscrapers back home in New York City. Around the impossibly steep walls ran a trench 10 feet deep. It was an impressive structure. Even more so to Sabrina was the fact that it had been built in only 2 days.
"How?" Sabrina cried.
Goldie winked at her, then stuck 2 fingers into her mouth. She blasted a rather unladylike whistle, and a moment later Sabrina could hear the turning of a heavy wheel and the rattling of chains. A giant wooden door in the wall tilted forward to span the trench. The drawbridge hit the earth on the other side with a clang and a thud. Behind the drawbridge was an iron gate.
"We haven't had time to fill the moat yet,"
Goldie explained as she led the group across the drawbridge.
"We're still trying to find alligators to live in it."
"I can help with that," Puck said, floating down from the air. I know a guy.
Goldie led the group through the stone arch, and the gate rose to admit them. Once past it, they saw a castle standing nearly 4 stories tall, built from thick white stones and framed by 2 towers that spiraled several stories higher. On each tower were battlements, festooned with fluttering purple flags and ominous black cannons. On either side of the castle were several crude log cabins. The nutty smell of fresh bread wafted from one of them, and horses neighed from another. Throughout the yard, Sabrina saw old friends, all pounding hammers and sawing timber. She spotted Puss in Boots, Morgan Le Fay, the Scarecrow, even the Pied Piper and his son, Wendell.
"So, how many people do you have in this army?" Pinocchio asked.
22, Goldie said.
22? That's preposterous, Pinocchio said, chuckling.
What does preposterous mean? Daphne said.
He's calling it silly, Sabrina said. Goldie shrugged.
Well, as Geppetto always says, we're small, but we're spunky.
Suddenly, Pinocchio's sneer slipped off his face.
My papa is here. Is he well? Is he injured? Your father is fine. As you know, he's a very talented carpenter. And along with the pigs and Mordred's magic, they've made the place into something livable that we can also defend. I can take you to him.
Look, Daphne cried.
Across the courtyard stood Morgan Le Fay's son, Mordred. The last time Sabrina had seen the warlock, he was engrossed in a very violent video game from the comfort of his mother's couch. It didn't look like he had changed his black T-shirt and pants, but at least he was now doing something productive. A stream of white light emanated from his fingers and enveloped a newly constructed water tower lying on its side in the courtyard. Slowly, the tower struggled to right itself, hobbling back and forth. Borman and Swinehart looked on, wearing hard hats and studying architectural plans.
"Now we see how you got this castle built so quickly," Henry said to Goldie.
"Mordred is really indispensable. Unfortunately, there are some complicated side effects to his magic."
Sabrina watched as the water tower suddenly lunged away from Mordred, stomping up and down and attempting to squash the pigs and the warlock. Mordred shot a couple of fireballs at the ground beneath it, and it backed down from its attack. Goldie shrugged.
"Everything he brings to life turns evil and murderous for the last few minutes of the spell. It calms down eventually, but it's a bit unpredictable for a while."
Puck grinned.
"I have to party with that guy."
As everyone watched Mordred subdue the evil water tower, Prince Charming and Mr. Seven approached. Sabrina had never been so happy to see them. Charming needed a shave and a bath, but he was still staggeringly handsome, even wearing his trademark scowl. Mr. Seven was as friendly as ever, perhaps even more so. He was as filthy as Charming, with his shirt sleeves rolled up and yellow sawdust all over his clothes and shoes, but his smile looked exceptionally big.
"Hello, Grimms, Canis. Ladies, a word, please,"
Charming growled as he turned to face Goldie and Beauty.
"I thought we had an agreement. No one leaves the castle without my approval."
Beauty gave him a smile and batted her eyelashes.
"We were only gone for a little while."
"Don't try the calming the savage beast nonsense on me, lady," Charming said. "The rules are here to keep everyone safe."
Sabrina rolled her eyes. It seemed as if she wasn't the only one in town sitting at the kids' table.
"We needed Henry. He's the only one who can reach Jake," Goldilocks explained.
Charming threw up his arms in surrender.
"Jake is hardly the biggest of our problems, but fine. It's not like I can control the two of you anyway."
"I'm glad you finally understand,"
Goldie said. Beauty nodded.
"We were wondering when you were going to catch on."
"Interesting. Some people break the rules and it makes things better," Sabrina muttered within earshot of her father. Henry flashed her a warning look that said it was much too soon for sarcasm. Sabrina mimicked locking her lips with a key, then tossing it behind her back.
"It's so good to see you too, Billy,"
Daphne said, wrapping him in a big hug. The prince stood patiently, if uncomfortably, while the little girl clung to him like a monkey. Daphne adored the stuffy, overbearing man, even if the feeling was not mutual.
Yes, let's get you to your uncle, Charming said, pushing her gently aside.
He turned and led the group along the castle wall, where there were even more log cabins.
So, you're going to try to fight them again? Henry asked the prince. We don't have much of a choice, Charming said. Most of the citizens of this town joined the Scarlet Hand either by pressure or force. Those left in this camp are the ones the Hand didn't want. We fight or we die. We could use some help if you're willing to stay.
Henry looked to Veronica. No, we need to rescue my mother, and then I'm taking my family far away from this place.
So, you're leaving us to clean up the mess, Henry? Charming said.
Henry ignored him.
It's good to see you, girls,
Mr. Seven said to Sabrina and Daphne with a big, toothy grin.
Lovely day, huh?
Mr. Seven, we can always count on your good mood,
Sabrina marveled, looking around at the dirty castle and the drizzling rain.
Of course he's in a good mood, Charming said. The fool has gone and fallen in love.
And it's spreading, a voice said from behind them.
Sabrina turned and saw Morgan Le Fay approaching with a basket of herbs and berries. Morgan was a curvy beauty and quite glamorous, with the kind of face you might see in an old black-and-white movie. Even wearing a hard hat and overalls, she was a stunner. Seven rushed to her side, and when the woman knelt down to his height, he planted a kiss on her that made everyone blush.
Mom, please!
Mordred groaned from the corner, where he'd finally subdued the water tower.
Can you two give it a rest?
Sorry, honey, Morgan said. My darling boyfriend has swept me off my feet. In fact, he popped the question last night.
We're getting married.
As soon as everything calms down,
Seven explained. Puck flapped up to the happy couple.
Wait a minute! You have to ask someone to marry you? No one told me that. I thought you just hit them with a club and dragged them back to your cave.
Henry put his arm around Sabrina.
You're officially grounded from ever getting married.
Thank you,
Sabrina whispered sincerely.
Charming grumbled. Oh, this kissing and hugging is becoming quite tiresome. There is serious work to do here. The west wall needs fortifying. The armory is still not ready. The stables need cleaning. We can't move into the castle until it's complete. And these two are running off at the drop of a hat to stare into each other's eyes.
I seem to recall a certain handsome prince doing the same with me last night,
Snow White said from the doorway of one of the cabins.
It seemed you couldn't throw a rock without hitting some gorgeous princess or exotic enchantress around here, but Snow White was in a class all by herself. Her skin was creamy and flawless. Her hair was as black as night, and her lips were full and pink. She wrapped her arms around Charming and planted a kiss on his cheek. He looked as if her touch made him dizzy.
Snow giggled. I'm just teasing, Casanova.
Humph, Charming said,
though he did flash a hint of a smile. The prince and Snow White had a long, complicated relationship. Hundreds of years ago, she left him at the altar. In the centuries since, he married Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, and Rapunzel. None of those marriages had worked out, and Sabrina suspected the reason was Snow. Even after countless centuries, William Charming could not get her out of his system.
Come to join the army?
Snow asked the Grimms.
No, Henry said. We're here to see Jacob.
Snow White's smile disappeared.
Oh, Henry, maybe you want to leave the girls here with me.
Henry looked to Veronica.
Maybe, Sabrina interrupted.
Sure, Dad. That is, if you can trust us out of your sight. We do have a tendency to get into shenanigans, Daphne said.
Henry frowned. No, they'll stay with me. Daphne shared a knowing wink with Sabrina.
As they continued their walk along the perimeter of the fortress, the group came across Geppetto, who, despite his advanced age, was splitting firewood with an axe. Pinocchio watched him for several moments, silently, as if preparing for a big speech. Finally, he sputtered out,
"Papa?"
like a little boy. Sabrina realized immediately it wasn't a speech Pinocchio was readying. It was a performance.
"Pinocchio!"
Geppetto dropped a handful of wood and rushed to the little boy. He scooped him up in his arms and showered him with kisses.
"My son! My son!"
Pinocchio hugged the old man and forced a few tears.
"Oh, Papa, I thought... Oh, it's too terrible to say."
Sabrina and Daphne looked at each other in bewilderment. "And the Oscar goes to?" Sabrina said.
"Papa, you have no idea how bad things have been for me,"
Pinocchio cried.
"These horrible people expect me to sleep on the floor, and they are incredibly rude. We're living on rice and..."
"I know what you did, son," Geppetto said.
Suddenly, the crocodile tears dried from Pinocchio's face.
Then, you have to hear my side of the story," he stammered.
"Your side of the story is that you betrayed a family I consider amongst my dearest friends. You helped to loot and destroy their home, leaving them with nothing. You conspired with their mortal enemy, my mortal enemy. You helped a monster who tried to steal the body of a little boy, and when that failed, took Rell the Grim for his puppet. You remember what it was like to be controlled by a master, and yet you allowed it to happen to someone else."
"Mirror promised to turn me into a man."
"A man? What makes you think you are ready to be a man? Do you think playing chess and reading big books without pictures makes you a man? It takes more than the interests of an adult to make you one. Why, I wouldn't be surprised if the blue fairy spell keeps you as a child until you are ready to grow up. Is that something you've ever considered? Perhaps you are too immature."
"Papa, please,"
Pinocchio cried.
"You don't understand."
"I understand perfectly. I have failed you as a father. But that is going to change as of this moment. You are going to become a good person. I'm going to make sure of it, or I will speak to the blue fairy myself and have her turn you back into a puppet."
"I was a marionette."
"Your first lesson is to shut your mouth when your father is speaking to you,"
Geppetto roared.
"Why, you act like you don't love me anymore, father,"
Pinocchio whimpered.
"Oh, I love you, son. More than I can ever say. But right now, I don't like you very much."
He picked up the axe and placed it into his son's soft hands.
"What's this for?"
"Chopping wood, of course. You're the one who wants to be a grown-up. Grown-ups have jobs. Get to work," Geppetto said.
Pinocchio turned to the Grimms with a look of desperation on his face.
"Don't look at us," Sabrina said.
She and the others all turned their backs on him and walked away. As Charming led them around one more corner, Sabrina felt something whiz past her head, followed by a loud thunk. The next second, she spotted a knife impaled in the chest of a straw dummy propped on a stake not more than a foot away. The dummy was dressed as the Sheriff of Nottingham, complete with a leather jacket and hat. Another dummy dressed as the Queen of Hearts was nearby. It had another knife buried in its forehead.
"Sabrina," Uncle Jake cried, racing to her side. "I'm sorry, I did not know. Henry, Veronica, what are you all doing here?"
"We came to see you," Henry said. "We're worried about you."
"I suppose they've told you I've lost my mind," Uncle Jake scowled, and slumped into an old wooden chair placed near a grave marked by a wooden cross.
Despite the freshness of the plot, it was completely covered in gorgeous white roses in full bloom. This was the grave of Sleeping Beauty, also known by her friends as Briar Rose.
Surrounding her plot were candles, beads, dried flowers, and photographs of Jake's former love. Seeing them brought on a stampede of memories for Sabrina about the night she died. Why did someone so kind and lovely have to be taken away? Sabrina had prayed for an answer many times, but it had never come. As she struggled to hold back tears, she became painfully aware of her uncle's current appearance. He was a wreck, exhausted, filthy, gaunt, and angry. His smell was oppressive, like a hot summer night in New York City. Sabrina knew at once that Goldie and Beauty had done the right thing coming to them for help. A large black crow with a red ribbon tied about its neck fluttered from above and landed on the back of Jake's chair.
"No one thinks you're crazy, big guy," the bird said.
Normally, Sabrina would have felt queasy. Talking animals made her uncomfortable, but Sabrina recognized this particular bird as the widow, Queen of the Crows.
"I'm fine," Jake said, as he leaped from the chair.
The crow hopped down to the ground.
"I have no plans to kill myself, if that is what you are worrying about."
Henry gestured to the knives impaled in Jake's stuffed targets. "It's your other plans that are worrying us."
"That's none of your business," Jake said. He snatched his weapons and shoved them into the pockets of his jacket.
Henry shook his head. "I understand you're hurt."
"Hurt? I'm a little more than hurt, Hank. I am destroyed. I promised Briar's fairy godmothers I would look after her, and now she's gone. Those monsters killed her, Hank, right in front of my eyes."
"Revenge won't bring her back," Henry said. "It will just hurt you more. It will hurt your soul." Jake turned to his brother with a look of utter disbelief.
"My soul? You've got to be kidding me, Henry. Do you want to see my soul? It's in that hole right there. It's buried 6 feet deep."
He hefted a quill of arrows onto his back and scooped up a bow, leaning against the wall. Then, without another word, he marched in the direction of the drawbridge.
"Where are you going?" Henry called after him. "It's better that you don't know," Jake shouted back.
He activated the drawbridge and was across it and into the woods before anyone thought to stop him. Sabrina could feel panic squeezing her heart. Her uncle was exhausted and obsessed with two incredibly dangerous people. Who knew what might happen if he found them?
"We have to go after him," Veronica said. "He's not thinking clearly."
"The hand is crawling all over these woods," Charming said. "Bringing you all here was a tremendous risk to begin with. I can't have you stumbling around in the forest drawing attention to us." "He's my brother," Henry shouted.
"I'll keep an eye on him,"
the crow squawked and flapped into the air.
"Sometimes he listens to me. I'll do my best to keep him out of trouble."
Once the widow was gone, Charming activated the machine to raise the drawbridge. But when it was barely halfway up, it came to a jerking stop.
"Borman! Swineheart! What is wrong with this infernal machine?" he shouted.
The pigs rushed to investigate, inspecting the chains and pulleys, but stepped back and scratched their heads.
"Nothing's broken, boss," Swineheart said. "Push the button again."
Charming did, but just as soon as the mechanisms started, they stopped again.
"Fix this," Charming huffed. "Keeping this door open makes this castle vulnerable."
A woman's voice rang out from outside the wall.
"Where are the Grimms?"
There was something otherworldly about the voice, as if it were being artificially amplified. The question was repeated.
"Who is that?" Veronica asked.
"Get your weapons!" Charming shouted to his army. "Someone has found the castle. We can't let them through the gate."
The castle inhabitants rushed to arm themselves. Sabrina was about to do the same when her father clamped his hand on her shoulder. He had Daphne held with his other hand.
"Don't even think about it, girls," he said.
There was a terrible metal straining sound, and then the chains on the drawbridge snapped. The bridge fell forward and slammed into the trench.
Henry stepped in front of his family and prepared to fight. Puck landed next to him and drew his wooden sword. Even Mr. Canis had his shaking fists in the air. Suddenly, a woman stormed through the gate. Her frightening voice did not match her appearance. She wore a pretty black dress, milky pearls, and expensive heels. If Snow was the most beautiful woman in the world, this woman was a close second. It made sense. After all, she was Ms. White's mother, a woman some called Bunny Lancaster, while others knew her by her more well-known name, the Wicked Queen.
"Mother," Snow said, "how did you find us?"
"There are few things in this world that my eyes cannot see," Bunny snapped. "Bunny, you broke my drawbridge," Charming cried. The witch dismissed him with a wave. "I want everyone to follow me." Henry stepped forward. "We had some things we wanted to ask you, Bunny." "No questions. It's time we got to work saving the world," the witch replied. She stepped over to Papa Bear, and with a slash of her hand, the ropes that held the magic mirror onto his back were magically severed. She eased the big mirror to the ground and leaned it against a cabin wall, then turned to Sabrina and pointed a finger at her. "You, where are you keeping the other mirrors?" Sabrina pointed toward the mirror, and without a word, the queen plunged through its reflection. Sabrina looked at her father, who was still holding her and Daphne tight, but he eased his grip and led them into the mirror as well. "Hurry now," the witch demanded as soon as they broke the surface and entered the Hall of Wonders. Everyone followed them, eager to hear what Bunny was planning. "Which room is it? Time is wasting. Don't you want to save Rilda?" Red rushed down the hall to meet them with baby Basil in her arms.
"What's going on?"
Sabrina shrugged.
"I don't have a clue."
Then she hurried ahead and unlocked the room in which they stored the other mirrors. Sabrina had barely swung the door open when Bunny pushed past her into the room. Once inside, the Wicked Queen looked around, bewildered. "Someone has not been taking care of these mirrors."
"They were like this when we found them,"
Daphne said. The queen gazed closely at the shards that were glued to the walls, marveling at the different places they revealed.
"Fascinating. These are pieces of other looking glasses. The master used them to spy on us and everyone in town," Sabrina said. "He could see into any mirror he wanted," Daphne added.
"I know very well what he was doing with them, young ladies," she said, and then walked over to the fifth intact magic mirror, which was empty as always.
"That one's guardian has never appeared to us," Mr. Canis said.
"That's because it doesn't have one. This is the one that resets them all to their factory settings." "Ongigan!" Bunny cried, and a scarlet-red handprint appeared in the fifth mirror. There was a loud humming that seemed to shake the very air, and then suddenly the broken shards peeled themselves off the walls and floated about in midair. Like bees to nectar, they darted into the correct empty frames and reformed themselves, melting into one another until their surfaces were clean and whole. When the mirrors were completely repaired and looking as good as new, the witch raised her hand above her head. Sabrina watched as it turned bright red, cracking and popping and smoldering like a charcoal briquette.
"Give it a second," Bunny said. "They need to reboot."
After a moment, the red handprints appeared in all the newly mended mirrors and just as quickly faded.
"Mirrors, I require your presence," Bunny said sternly.
And in the blink of an eye, 24 different heads floated in 24 silver pools. Many looked as normal as any human being, but other guardians seemed more beast-like. One had a pointy nose as long as a yardstick, and another had eyes and lips as big as a trout. There were faces that were clearly human, and a few that seemed as if they came from outer space. One was a huge iguana-like thing, and another had the face of a beautiful woman with the antlers of a deer. One had the eyes of a crocodile and a smile to match.
Sabrina was happy to see that Reggie, Fanny, Titan, and Donovan were amongst them. But she was especially overjoyed to see a familiar face, Harry, who had been the guardian of Prince Charming's mirror, the Hotel of Wonders.
"Hello, Mother," they said with great respect.
"Please stop calling me that. Arden, I come seeking a prophecy," Bunny said.
"Ask what you will,"
the antler woman said, and her reflection rippled and shimmied. The other mirrors followed suit until each guardian was now barely visible behind their churning silver. Daphne slipped her hand into Sabrina's and squeezed. After a long, unsettling moment, the mirrors stilled, and each guardian's eyes glowed with the power of a full moon.
"We see all. Every day that has passed, every day to come. There are a myriad of possibilities, many paths that can be taken, many possible outcomes.
Mirrors, mirrors, our future is cursed. Tell me how to defeat the first," the queen said.
"You cannot," they replied as one.
"You are mistaken," the witch said.
"The future is woven like a spider's web, with millions of strands leading toward the conflict you seek. If you choose this quest for yourself, you will fail. In all possible futures, the one you call Mirror will defeat you. He will destroy Wilhelm's barrier. He will unleash his power on mankind. Nations will kneel before him. Mother, you cannot stop our brother."
"Nonsense," the queen cried. "I created Mirror. I very well should be able to destroy him."
"The future says otherwise."
Bunny shook her head.
"Then you're saying there is no hope?"
"None along this path."
The witch turned to the crowd.
"I'm sorry. I was mistaken. My suggestion to you all is to run and hide. I wish you luck."
Sabrina was stunned. The mirrors had to be wrong. She stepped forward so she blocked Bunny's way.
"You're just going to give up?"
The wicked queen's lip curled.
"The mirrors don't lie, child."
"Well, then your mirrors are stupid," Daphne said.
"This is all your fault," Sabrina said. "You made Mirror, then abandoned him. You sold him like he was an old chair, and he wound up with owners that were twisted and cruel. It's no wonder he's gone crazy and taken my grandmother. So you fix this. You find a way."
The wicked queen's eyes were bright with anger. Sabrina could feel dark magic building in the air around her. Everyone was afraid of this woman, even her own daughter, and it appeared Sabrina was going to find out why.
"Mirrors. The child did not hear what you said," Bunny said through clenched teeth.
"Listen to our words. The queen can do nothing to stop the first."
"Fine. Bunny can't do it, but someone else might have a chance,"
Sabrina argued.
"The fate of this world falls in the hands of the sisters."
"Huh?" the witch said. "The sisters?"
Daphne asked.
"We see many who would stand before the first. Heroes, witches, fairy folk. But in all these outcomes, only two meet your goal successfully, and only together. In all the world and other realms, there are only two who can stop Mirror, Sabrina and Daphne Grimm."
"What?"
Sabrina cried.
I didn't hear you say my name,"
Puck said. Henry and Veronica pushed to the front of the crowd.
"This has to be a mistake," Henry said.
"They're just little girls," Veronica added.
"Your children hold the keys to the future. Each must use her own strengths. But when the time is at hand, it is their bond that defeats the first.
Wait, what strengths?
Sabrina cried.
Daphne creates the coven, the mirrors said. A crone, a temptress, an innocent three.
What's a coven?
Daphne asked.
Shh, Bunny snapped. Sabrina leads the army into battle, the mirrors continued.
I'm 12 years old, Sabrina said. I can't lead an army.
Act in haste. The first is coming for you. Blood will spill. Heartbreak will come. But the sisters are your only hope.
But how do we do it? Daphne said. We need details, people.
The strands are complex and unexplainable. The two of you will save the world, but many things will happen outside of your control to make it possible. Nothing we can share will lead you to success. Build your coven. Wage your war.
Then the mirrors shimmered again and returned to normal, with the guardians in their places. Each looked tired and disoriented, but the faces that concerned Sabrina the most were those of Charming's army. They looked at her and Daphne with fear and shock.
We're going to save the world,
Daphne said, raising her hand to her sister so she could deliver a high five. Sabrina, however, stood dumbfounded, unable to speak. Puck laughed.
We are so screwed!